You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. Plenty to respond to in the program this morning. If you agree that the United States dropped the ball on Asia, as the BBC was telling us a moment ago, you can reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Also, in a broader, maybe more personal subject, do you think that grief is just one of life's, events, or is it more of a physiological phenomenon? Does it affect you deeply in biological terms? What is your story of grief? Where does it live in your brain, in your heart, in your soul? Give us a story at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We're going to be talking about that in just a moment, or you can reach us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. Virginia Eskridge from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, good morning.
Good morning.
Virginia, when somebody says to you, time will heal all wounds, and, why don't you just get over it, I gather that's not something that you respond to terribly well.
No, it's not. I was very stunned to find that the grief I experienced went on for 20 years. I think the same things have been said about depression, and I think we've discovered that depression is an entity unto itself.
And grief is something actually worth exploring. Virginia, describe briefly what it is that happened to you 20 years ago, and then I want to bring Mary Frances O'Connor on to talk about what it took for you to get beyond at least the initial sense of grief. Okay, Ginny?
Yes. Actually, it was 25 years ago. I went through the therapy program with Dr. Catherine Shear at the University of Pittsburgh 5 years ago. What happened is that my husband and I got together in, I guess you could call it middle age. I was in my mid-30s. He was in his mid-40s. We had been friends for years, but we had both been divorced. And we got together and were just crazy about each other. We had a wonderful marriage. We were so in love that we used to wake up in the morning and just grin at each other. I had a little boy, Jesse, and Fred just absolutely loved Jesse. So we were very, very happy. And 6 years into the marriage, he developed a brain tumor, which I didn't know at the time, but is pretty much uniformly fatal. So we went through the process of trying to heal that, and of course it didn't work. So he died in 1983. And I was just, of course, devastated, as was our son, who was then 12. And I just couldn't function. I had been a very active person. I was a reference librarian at a law school in Pittsburgh. I was about to start law school myself. which my husband totally supported. He was an anthropology professor at a local women's college, and he was very much a feminist and was just happy and proud of me that I'd be willing to tackle law school at that age.
Ginny, I can hear the closeness in your relationship and the deep sadness that you must have felt from your loss, but let's talk about this 20-year journey. Mary Frances O'Connor joins us now. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry and biobehavioral sciences at UCLA. Mary Frances, what was going on, as you are beginning to understand it, physiologically in Ginny Eskridge?
Good morning.
And good morning.
We were surprised as we embarked upon this study to find that the group of people we investigated who were adapting well had a very different response in their brain than people who were not adapting well, people who were undergoing what Ginny probably experienced.
And it's something that you've begun to describe as complicated grief, and it apparently affects perhaps a million Americans. Grieving that becomes a physical condition that affects a distinct part of the brain. How do you treat such a thing?
Yes, so complicated grief has a distinct set of symptoms. It only affects 10 to 20% of people who are bereaved, but of course that's a large number of people. It's something that lasts for more than 6 months and affects every day and is found to contain people feel just intense yearning, and that the future is somewhat purposeless, and they may feel extremely angry or bitter about the death. And as Ginny mentioned, Dr. Catherine Scheer has developed some treatment for it that fits very well with what we've found in this group of people in the brain when they're looking at a picture of the deceased or are reminded of a memory of the deceased. Hmm.
So, Ginny, you had to break specific patterns of thought to even get close to getting beyond your grief. Can you describe that to me?
Yes, I can. And I think I didn't quite emphasize enough how totally debilitated I was. I mean, there were actually years that went by that I couldn't do anything but lay on the couch and cry. I mean, I was just incapacitated. I wound up with some social withdrawal because, you know, when you go out for dinner with your friends and you burst into tears when somebody mentions your husband's name, that's not good for the social event. So at any rate, what happened was I just, sheer luck, I stumbled upon a brochure about Dr. Scheer's grief program and decided to go to check it out. And I'm very skeptical about things in general, and I was skeptical about this, whether it would work, and especially after 20 years, but I decided to sign up. And the treatment is sort of, I guess it's like a desensitization in a way. It was 5 months of very intense therapy every week. I had to go and make an audio tape and a videotape of the therapy with my wonderful therapist, Bonnie Gorsak.
And Ginny, the strategy was really to get you away from a kind of clinging to happy thoughts and moving you away from patterns of memory that would put you back on the couch crying, right?
Yes, right, except in my case it was a little different, I think, or maybe not different, but the thoughts were not necessarily happy. They were thoughts of how his suffering with his illness,
right.
But of course the happy thoughts were there and needed to be unburied.
Well, Ginny, we just have a couple of seconds here, and I want to sort of conclude with Mary Frances. What is the takeaway, I guess, what are people who are experiencing something like this to make of your results, and where do they go from here, quickly?
Well, we found that brain areas that are not conscious are being evoked in these folks who are not adapting well. So it isn't necessarily a conscious process. And so these folks aren't doing this on purpose. It's not something they can just set aside. Mm-hmm. And so if people are experiencing this, it's something they may want to seek help with a support group or with a professional.
And it's a deep physiological phenomenon that you simply can't get over. Mary Frances O'Connor, thanks for joining me. Also, Ginny Eskridge, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.